Welcome to Shroomland, the podcast where we explore strange and obscure media in an effort to understand how it feels to be on drugs without actually taking any.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Taylor.
Let's get in it. Disclaimer, this is explicit content and contains all possible spoilers. Proceed with caution. So today, we're going to be talking about The Perfect Host, directed by Nick Tomney. And Taylor's going to give us a quick description.
A crook on the run cons his way into a dinner party whose host is anything but ordinary. This movie was rated 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb and 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. It also won 3 awards. So how would you describe the movie in 5 words?
Bank robbing, dinner party, betrayal. Taylor, with those 5 words, what you thinking?
I think that person who conned his way into the dinner party is a bank robber, but it turns out that the host was also a bank robber but was his like bank robber partner, but then they never saw each other's faces, so he doesn't realize until the end of the movie. But his bank robber partner was supposed to be the getaway driver, and he drove away and he left the dude, and then the dude got arrested, and now he's been released from prison and he's found out who his partner is, and now he's going to murder him.
I'm down for that. That seems cool. Cool. That's not it. It's cool. Okay, so let's get into it. Meet our main dude, John. John has done a crime of some sort. We don't know at the very beginning, though my words will have given it away. And all we see is that he's got a fucked up foot, and we never figure out why his foot's fucked up, but it's got a big old gash in it, and he's stealing a car. And so he steals a car, and then he gets out of that car, steals another car, goes to a convenience store, tries to get disinfectant for his foot situation and something else from the convenience store. And the convenience store happens to be getting robbed at the same moment that he, for his unspecified crimes, is like trying to get disinfectant. So there's a lady holding up the place, and then he gets into an argument with her because he's like, "Lady, I'm just trying to get disinfectant." And she, like, steals his wallet. And then she tells him to drop the disinfectant. And he's like, "This is the last one they have and I need it for my foot." And she's like, "You think I won't shoot you?" And so then he drops it, but then he steals her gun and, like, holds it at her. And he's like, "Give me my wallet back. Like, I don't give a shit what you're doing, but I need my wallet." And then she just dips with all of the money from the register and his wallet. And he doesn't shoot her.
Bold move.
People are weird. And then he looks at the TV. There's a TV in there, one of those like tiny ones, like a security camera basically, except it's got the news on it, and there's they're talking about him and his face is on the screen. And then the guy that worked at the register picked up one of the guns that was on the ground, because apparently John had a gun and also the woman had a gun, so he like disarmed the woman, used his gun, and then now the register guy has his gun. And it's the whole thing. So then he is like, "Get out," to our dude. And so we're like, cool. And then John is in his car and he's listening to the radio, and he's hearing that like they know they're on to him and they know what car he's driving. And so he has to like get out of the car, basically. So he drives to a neighborhood, ditches the car, walks on foot, and he's trying to find a place to get into, basically, so he can lay low and figure out his next move. It seems like whatever happened didn't go well. And so now he needs to fix his foot, hold tight for a minute, and then he has some other stuff that he's gonna do, probably. And so he tries to knock on this woman's door. He sees that the woman has like a Jehovah Witness sign or something in the window. And so he's like, "Oh, my car just broke down. My wallet recently got stolen. I'm new to the neighborhood, just trying to find my friend. And I was so delighted to see that you have the sign of Jehovah on your house. And I was just wondering if I could come in and borrow your phone real quick." And then this woman is like, "Oh, you're one of us? Part of the cult?" And he's like, "Yeah, absolutely." And then she's like, "Oh, but you don't have the cross on you. Like, you're not wearing the cross." And he was like, "Oh, unfortunately, it got stolen from me in the robbery." And she's like, "Oh, maybe I'll get one next Christmas." And then she closes the door on him, and he, like, sticks his foot in the way, and he's like, "But but I'm also one of you. And she's like, no, you're fucking not. We don't wear the cross. And you would know that we don't adhere to the cross or Christmas if you were one of us. You weasel snake human. I don't remember what animal she described him as, but like, you know, one of them. And then he's like, oh, shit.
Smart girl.
I know. I was like, this lady is witty. I would not have. A, I don't have a Jesus sign in my window, but also, like, I wouldn't have thought to, like, trick someone up. I would have just been like, you need to borrow my phone? Cool. Stand here.
Yeah.
I'll bring it out. Or I wouldn't have opened the door. Actually, I just wouldn't have opened the door. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So then this dude goes to the next door, and he, like, checks the mail, and he sees that there's a postcard from a woman named Julia, and he reads the postcard. And then he, like, buzzes the guy's house, and he's like, hey, dude, I'm gonna call him host, because he's the host of this dinner party, that's gonna happen, and, I think his name's, like, Warwick or something, but I don't care. And so John is like, oh my gosh, hi, I just flew into LA, I'm here to visit a cousin, I'm a friend of Julia's, and she spoke so highly of you, I was just wondering, like, my wallet got stolen, and my cousin's not home yet, and I don't have my luggage, because that was misplaced. Like, basically, he tells this guy, like, the airline lost his luggage, and he got mugged, so his wallet's gone, and he knows this Julia woman, and she said such nice things, and he was like, this is my last-ditch effort, before I just go, like, wait outside my cousin's house. And this guy is like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have, like, a dinner party in a minute, and it's just not gonna work for me. And they're, like, talking on a speakerphone the whole time, so the guy doesn't actually have to open the door, which is brilliant.
Yeah, so far what this movie is teaching me is that I should not open the door for anyone ever.
Yeah, that's what I've learned. And so then the guy, the host guy, opens the door, and he's like, oh, Julia would never forgive me if I let you just, like, go wander out in the street. Come in, come in. And so then John gets into the house, and this guy is just, like, playing Mr. Host Man, and he's just like, oh, I don't want to be rude. Do you want, like, a glass of wine or a water or something while you wait? Whatever. And then the guy's like, oh, a glass of wine would be lovely. And then he's like, red or white? And gets red. And then the host goes and pours himself a glass of wine and that guy a glass of wine. And they, like, talk about Julia. And he's, like, getting his stuff ready for the dinner party. He's making duck. And he's got this big fancy house. So John's just kind of looking around like, damn, this is a big place. And then there's a scene when John goes into the bathroom to, like, tend to his foot. And you can see that it's got, like, a big gash on it. It kind of looked like it might be a dog bite, but it's unclear. It's just super bloody and fucked up. And so he, like,
gross,
wraps it a little bit. And he's, like, the host is having these conversations with him where he's like, oh, what airline did you fly? I'll call them to see if they've found your luggage so we can at least get, like, one of these things resolved. And so then he's on the phone chatting and you're like, oh, and then the guy is like, oh, it sounds like they don't have any information for this, but the supervisor will be back in an hour. You can just call back then. Like, completely non-suspicious about the situation, it seems. And then John's like, that sounds perfect. And he's like, well, if you're not sure that your cousin's going to be back in an hour, why don't you just stay for dinner? And then you can be here for dinner. You'll have a phone accessible to call in case, like, you don't aren't in this other building. So he's, like, being seemingly very nice. And then he's like, it's so weird that Julia didn't tell me about you. Like, if this is a thing, like, we talk about everything. And he's like, oh, yeah, I mean, I guess next time. And then he's like, why don't we call her now? Like, apparently Julia's in Australia. And he's like, it should be about 9 a.m. there. Why don't we just give her a call? And so then he's about to pick up the phone, and you see him kind of on the phone just like, do-do-do. Oh, voicemail. And so he leaves a voicemail, and John is like, whew, dope. And so then they're like, at the dinner table, asking questions, just having, like, small talk and stuff. And then, I don't remember what the host guy asks him, but he asks something. And then John hears the radio, and the radio's talking about him. And then he tells he asks the host to be quiet for a minute, but the host is still talking. And then he, like, tells the guy to shut the fuck up. And then he's like, that was extremely rude. And then they both hear the guy talk about how John is a violent criminal who has a history of assault and robbery. And you're like, cool. And so then John stands up, hobbles, grabs a knife, and threatens to, like, kill the guy, basically. He's like, you're gonna let me stay the night, and you're gonna fucking feed me, and you're gonna cancel your goddamn dinner party. And then the host guy is like, you can't kill me, I have guests coming over. And I was just like, oh.
I want to think that this man is just very dumb and doesn't have his priorities in line, but I have the feeling that, like, he just has a reason to not be afraid of this dude.
Yeah. I mean, your intuition is solid. So, the host is, like, I mean, it came off, like, when you're watching it, it came off as just, like, being in shock and, like, no. And so then he calls his friend and he's like, hey, I have a migraine, I need to cancel. And then John, he asks his friend to call everybody else and let him know. And then John's like, dope. And then he, like, John is, like, smoking in his house and, like, dunking his cigarette in the other guy's wine, which is just rude. Like, fucking, come on. This guy was, like, very pleasant. He was trying to be really helpful. The least you can do is just, like, not fucking uses wine as an ashtray if you're gonna threaten to murder him.
I know we dropped the pretense and everything, but that's just bad manners.
I know! I was like, this guy's still making you dinner. You're gonna, like, sleep in his home. You might as well fucking not be a dick. Just because you're a bank robber and a murderer doesn't mean you have to be impolite, you know?
Yeah. Have some standards.
Has Hannibal Lecter taught us nothing? Yeah, so then, John takes his shoe off and, like, he's bleeding all over the place. And then the guy says, like, oh, let me get that. And he was talking about the blood stain on the floor. So he grabs a rag and he's, like, cleaning up the blood on the floor. And John's like, what are you doing? And he's like, cleaning up your mess. And then John kicks him in the face.
Oh, the nerve.
Like, dude, yeah, you are bleeding all over his floor. You just used his wine as an ashtray and you've threatened to murder him. Do you really think he's gonna tend to your wounds? Like, I would also just be cleaning the blood off the floor.
Jeez.
Yeah, so he gets kicked in the face. He's, like, making something. I don't know. And then they're chatting for a minute and then John's, like, sitting further back and the host is, like, starting to prep the table, but he's prepping, like, enough spots for all the people that he said he invited. And then all of a sudden John starts to slump over and he's, like, not feeling well because he was drugged, because the host drugged him. And then he's, like, very calmly just setting the table, like, yeah, you really downed a lot of that red wine, it's pretty strong stuff. And then he just kind of, like, he's trying to move forward but he passes out on the ground and you're like, yeah, I'm not mad at this.
There's something, like, I don't think there's anything quite as terrifying as someone saying something, like, really horrific or making a threat in a very calm, pleasant tone of voice. Like, there was an episode of The Orville where they did that, and these people, like, they had him over for dinner, and the dude is like, oh, like, the host is stirring the sauce, and the dude's like, oh, like, you should, you know, like, let me help you put that on the plate. Like, use your hand. Don't use the ladle. You don't need a ladle. Use your hand. Like, this boiling sauce. And he's totally pleasant the whole time. And then he pulls out a gun and is just like, no, use your hand. And it's deeply chilling.
I love it. I hate it, but I love it. You know?
Yeah.
I want to have that vibe. Because, damn.
It's very scary.
Unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that's a whole thing. And then, John wakes up, and he's got his hands tied behind his back, and he's sitting at a dinner table, and all of the plates are full, and the host is sitting all the way across from him, but all the other chairs are empty. Except the host is talking, as if there are people in the chairs. And so then you flash between perspectives and you realize that the host sees four people and is having full-blown conversations with them while John is sitting at the table tied up.
So is he schizophrenic or are there ghosts?
I believe it's meant to be schizophrenic. Or, like, something that induces hallucinations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then he's having conversations with these people, but then there's this weird bit where he's chatting with someone, and then he looks John dead in the eye, and he goes to some of the other chairs, like, where the food is at, because he put food on all the plates. And he just starts scarfing food from those plates. And, like, goes around to a couple different spots to do that. And he's, like, chatting with the people. He, like, puts a hand on, like, someone's back. You can see from his perspective. And John just sees this guy, like, kind of walking around talking to himself and, like, scarfing food. And then one of the people asks John a question. But obviously John doesn't hear it because he's not seeing these people. And so then the host kind of stares at him for a minute. And then he answers for John. And then he goes over to John and he plugs his nose and he, like, pours wine in his mouth. And then John, like, spits on him or says something rude. And then the host just smacks him super hard in the face and talks about how they have a real-life criminal at the dinner party.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he goes and he's, like, sitting at his spot. And then apparently there's a conversation about, like, a book or something. And so the host gets up to go, like, grab this book. And there's, like, a razor or something next to John. So he picks it up with his mouth, drops it, and then, like, uses it to cut his hands free because it was just rope. And so then he cuts his hands free. And this part was a little bit weird for me because he does that and then he, like, knocks one of the guests over and you hear from the other guy's perspective a scream. And so I don't know if the guy had turned around to see it, so his brain generated the scream, or if it was supposed to be ghosts. I just thought that was peculiar. So then he kind of crawls towards the kitchen. He's trying to get a knife, obviously. And then the host shows up behind him with this big book that he was talking about. And he's like, John. And then he turns around and, like, whacks John in the face and knocks him out again. The guy wakes up tied to the chair. And the host is, when he, like, comes to, the host is holding an ice pack in the air to the girl's face that he knocked over while the other people are just, like, behind him. And he's like, are you going to apologize to Nancy or Rebecca or whatever her name is? And John's like, you're fucking crazy, out loud. And you're like, that's not the move.
Boy, you don't learn fast, do you?
Yeah, this is not going to go well for you. And so then the host crawls on top of the table, grabs a knife out of a pie or something, and, like, holds it to John's face and is like, you fucking asshole. And then John's like, I'm sorry, Barbara. And then the host, like, crawls back, sits in his spot, and he's, like, talking to the people again, and he's just like, oh my gosh, we should show John the book. And so then he goes with this book, I think it's the same one, and plops it in front of John, and he opens it, and you see that it's a scrapbook, but it's a scrapbook with people that look, like, hella fucked up at dinner parties, and so they're, like, Polaroid pictures of people that have, like, cuts all over their face, and, like, there's a picture every 3 hours, so there's one at 9 p.m., midnight, 3 a.m., and then 6 a.m., and once you get to the 6 a.m. ones, the people's, like, throats are slit, and they're, like, in the bathtub. But, like, they get progressively worse and worse, and John has used, like, a white marker or something to draw the other people into the backgrounds.
You know what this reminds me of? What was that horror movie where, like, it was, like, a competition, it was, like, a game night, and the people went over to this dude's house, and he made them do things, like, he made a vegetarian eat beef, or, like, it just, like, got progressively more extreme.
Yeah, until someone, like, ripped their eyeball out. Yeah, would you rather?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Same vibe.
It is a very similar vibe.
Like, seemingly innocuous setting suddenly turns very dark very quickly.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I thought we were just gonna play, like, truth or dare.
Yeah. So then John's like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. You're like, yeah, probably. And then I think this is when it happens, but it doesn't really fit into the rest of the plot, so I'm just going to plop it in here and we'll, like, talk about it. So the host drags John into this room where there's, like, a projector, one of those, like, old-timey film projectors, and he plays in this movie, this homemade movie, where the host is sitting in front of a camera with his shirt off and, like, a bathrobe and, like, boxers, chest exposed, and he grabs a knife and he's, like, slicing open his chest for minutes, laughing, like, maniacally. And he has, like, these long drags across his chest. And he got, like, 9 or 10 slices or something. And he's, like, watching it next to John, like, clapping his hands and, like, oh, wait for this part. Oh my gosh, isn't it so good? And you're like,
yikes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh boy.
That's uncomfortable. And then, oh yeah. So then the party's like hopping. So there's more brain people in the thing. And you get the scene where the host is like hitting on the girl that got knocked over. She's this blonde chick in his brain. And then apparently he's with this Julia girl. But, like, Julia's not there, so now he's hitting on this blonde chick, and she's like, oh my gosh, you're such a ladies' man, and you're like, now you know they're not real. Fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then this stuff, so, like, John's just kind of sitting, John is just kind of sitting around, like, watching this guy just fucking be weird, and then there's a scene where John is sitting on the couch and the host is like welcoming people in, but he's like making weird faces. He's like shaking his head back and forth, doing that like lip thing, fucking like, oh my god, it's so good to see you. Hi, hugging air. What up, handshakes, kisses, things. And then there's a dance scene where he stands on a table, looks dead at John, and does a choreographed dance with his friends. But John just sees this guy, like, dancing in front of him, like a weird, like, thriller, basically, was the vibe of the dance. But he is imagining that there's, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 people participating in this dance number. And so you keep flashing between, like, John's perspective and the host's perspective, which is, like, weird. And then he gets into a conga line, which obviously, like, a lot of this will, like, flash between perspectives, but there will also be parts that just hang out in John's perspective. So you're just, like, this dude is, like, doing a conga by himself.
Oh, wow.
Which is weird. And then John's like, hey, can I get in on the conga? And he's like, if you have a cocktail, you can. And John's like, what's in the cocktail? And he's like, do you want it or not? And then this part was weird. John was like, fine, after the guy walked away. And then the guy asked one of his, like, friends to make a cocktail. And so I'm not totally sure how that happened. But he comes over with, like, this blue thing, and then he makes John drink it, and then he kind of waits, and then John gets kind of slumped over, and then you get a scene where he's, like, carrying John in a conga, so John's at the front of the conga line with this guy right behind him, and then his imaginary friends are all, like, in line behind them, and then because John is, like, dead weight, the guy and him fall over, and then in the dude's mind, the whole conga line basically falls on them, so you watch him just, like, without anyone falling on him, like, moving his body as if, like, weight is continually being dropped on him. And he's, like, chuckling, and he's like, John, look what you've done!
It's funny how, like, how much context can change a scene, because, like, this sounds, like, funny, and also, I imagine, like, just a little disturbing. Whereas, like, that show on BBC, Ghosts, where, like, the one lady can see all these ghosts and no one else can, occasionally it will do that thing where it switches between, like, her point of view and other people's point of view, and every time that happens, it's just, like, stupidly funny. Like, she'll go to hand something to a ghost, and it just falls on the floor. And from the other person's perspective, you just watch someone hold something out and drop it on the floor.
Yeah.
So context is everything.
Context is important. Yeah, because I've seen, there's, like, a one where there's this, like, grumpy dentist that sees ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, another comedy where you're like, oh, that's charming. This one's just like, okay.
Like, oh, no. Oh, this is not good.
This is alarming. I mean, one thing that'll make it alarming is if, like, the other person is tied up that's not seeing
that's
all of
the things.
Easy change in context.
That is a bit of a downer.
Oh, yeah. And so also while he's super drugged, the host puts on his bathing suit because he has a pool, too. And so he's, like, in the pool swimming around and he gets floaties on John's arms and he puts him in one of those, like, circle floaties so his arms are hanging over. The visual is awesome. And John is just, like, so drugged. He can't do shit. He's just, like, there floating with his arms, like, barely holding him up. Thankfully, I guess, the host put him in that little floaty. And then the guy gets out of the pool and he's kind of walking around for a minute. And then John's just like, ah, making that sound, but like kind of a cry for help. And so that neighbor woman, the Jehovah's Witness, hears that and thinks that he's like hurt. And so she like is coming over to the house, but then the host is like getting John out of the pool and he like sits him on a chair, but he's still making that sound and the doors are open. And so the woman comes by and then the host like puts this weird fish mask on him that makes him look like the dude from Shape of Water. And then the woman's like, is he okay? He doesn't sound okay. And he's like, yeah, he's been in character all night. And she's like, what do you mean in character? And he's like, we went to a costume party. He's playing like Aquaman or some shit, and so he's just been making these weird sounds all night and I think he's pretty drunk. And then she's like, okay, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. And then she's like, all right. And she's kind of walking away and John like leaves the guy just sitting on the chair kind of like next to the door. And then he walks to go get something. And then John tries to stand up and, like, go talk to the woman. And then the host guy goes and grabs him. And he's like, oh, looks like it's time to go to bed. And then he goes, brings him inside. And then as the woman's, like, leaving, he just drops John on the floor. And you're like, fair, I guess.
I know it probably wasn't this funny to watch, but, like, the mental image is great.
I mean, it was a little funny. So apparently this is supposed to be a black comedy.
I could see that,
slash thriller. Yeah. Also, during these blackout scenes, you're getting these visuals of, like, John's life. So before, you can see that he was, like, rehabilitated, I guess, from his crime ways. But he was dating this woman that had some, like, severe pain of some sort. I don't know, abdominal pain. And she, like, refused to go to the hospital. And he was like, okay. And so you see that, like, basically the reason he had decided to rob a bank is because she needed money for medical expenses, is what it seemed like they were trying to make the case for. And so then he's like, and they tried to make it seem, like, cute between the two of them. And then what happened? Oh, so he wakes up and he's sitting at the dining table and John is, there's a chessboard and he's chatting with people and apparently it's like quiet time now. And John's like, I thought I'm a guest. And he's like, yeah, you are a guest. And he's like, well, I want to play chess. First he sees that the guy's writing those cards, those postcards from Julia. He's writing to himself. Which is, like, not a big surprise, but I guess John thought that maybe this guy had, like, one real person in his life. No, he doesn't. So now Julia's in Hong Kong. It doesn't matter, but I thought it was interesting. And he tried to break the guy's illusion, and I was like, it's not gonna work.
No,
it's not gonna work. It's a bad idea. At best, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then he convinces the guy to play chess with him. And so then they play chess, and you find out that John's actually, like, basically a grandmaster or something. He's, like, really fucking good at chess. And so he made a deal with the host guy that if he won, he would be allowed to leave. And the host was like, for sure. And so then he wins, and the host is like, I'm honest, like, let you go. So he, like, unties him, lets him go out the door, but then he starts to antagonize him. And he's like, you wanted this. You fucking let me do whatever you wanted, or let me do whatever I wanted, and you didn't even fight me.
That
and
then took a turn.
And then John was like, fuck you. And so there's some, like, samurai swords or something over the mantle. And so he goes over to the mantle, grabs one of them, and stabs the host. And the host, like, falls to the ground. And so you think he's dead, right? No. It was one of those prop swords that, like, it's a retractable. So then he pops up and punches John in the face, and John is officially unconscious again.
Man, you were so close. How are you a grandmaster at chess and this bad at strategy?
I know. He's, like, over I was like, dude, who gives a shit if a serial killer is antagonizing you? Your masculinity is so fragile that you're not just gonna fucking exit.
Yeah.
Oh, and there was a scene where the host was, like, talking to his imaginary friends about how the woman had seen John and was gonna call the cops. That was a thing. It wasn't super pertinent, so I just felt the urge to put it in there. And then John wakes up, I want to say, in the bathtub, and oh my god, this scene was so uncomfortable, because he wakes up in the bathtub, and I thought that the guy was masturbating, because he's, like, facing the camera and, like, thrusting and, like, grunting, and I was like, oh, I don't like this at all.
Oh, no, sir.
And then you realize, you never see her, thank god. But, like, he thinks that he's fucking one of the women from the party. And so he turns to John because, so, like, John's angle is he's in the bathtub. This guy's, like, facing the mirror. So he's seeing the guy's, like, back and robe. Thankfully. Oh, my God. But it's also just, like, ugh. It's not.
Like, I guess technically he is masturbating.
That's what I was saying. Also, I needed time to process it. It wasn't that long of a scene, but it was long enough. It was also one of those scenes that, like, I don't often feel the need to look away from TV, especially horror things. Usually, mm-hmm. if I look away, it's because someone's embarrassed themselves so much that I became embarrassed and I needed to walk away.
Yeah.
I don't usually have to look away for, like, gore or horror. That's not for me. I don't get scared, but that was nauseating. Oh, yeah, so he, like, turns to John and he's like, she's a beaut, isn't she? And I was like, oh my god, oh my god, even if you are fucking someone, A, I don't want the person you're about to murder to witness me in that position, but also, it like that. It is weird.
Honestly, like, after all the rape culture speech, I can't say I'm surprised they took it in this direction. Like, once they started in on the you wanted it, like, you just let me do all these things, like, of course they were gonna go there.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. It was so gross. Yeah. And then the guy slits John's throat, and you're like, okay, cool.
Well, that ended quickly.
He wakes up the next morning, like, the host actually not wakes up. It was 6 a.m. He's still awake. He's sitting there with, like, talking to one of his friends, who's apparently a prosecutor, and he takes, like, a pill, but he's supposed to take two, so, like, his mental people are arguing about whether he needs to take one or two pills. And then you get a camera flash and you see, like, the garbage cans in front of his house. There's metal garbage cans that are, like, cylindrical. But his legs are just poking out. So it looks like there's just a dead body, like, by the garbage cans. And then the neighbor lady sees that and is like, what the fuck? And she calls the cops, I think. I'm pretty sure. And then he stands up John.
John who had his throat slit?
John who had his throat slit and has a bunch of cuts on his face. And then he kind of wipes at his face. And one of the cuts comes off because it's stage makeup.
What? What? What the fuck?
And then the lady sees him, and then she calls cops again, I'm assuming. To be like, he's not dead, but he is the guy that tried to break into my house. Yeah, so it was stage makeup. He didn't get murdered. Apparently this guy is not a serial killer, he's just a crazy person. Also, we got a couple flashes to the cops that were investigating John and the robbery. And then you see that one of them shows up at the host's house. And that guy, the cop that shows up, is like, hi, Lieutenant. Let's go over the case. And so then they're sitting there going over John's case of robbery while his imaginary friends are sitting in the room. And then we're like, okay, so that's upsetting. And then John is trying to go get to his girlfriend. So apparently the plan had been that his girlfriend was a teller at the bank that he robbed. And so she was in on it with him. And that's how he was able to pull off the robbery. But it went south. And so he needed, like, their plan was to meet at a rental car place the next day at 9 a.m. to meet up and go to Mexico together, I guess. Where they could go live happily ever after with their spoils. And so then John gets suspicious because he thinks that she sold him out because there was some radio stuff that said that, like, one of the tellers told the cops who it was. And he's like, the only person that knew who I am was her. And so he's like, she sold me out. So then he goes to the car place to check and see if the reservation is there. And there is a reservation for 9 a.m. for under her name. And so he's like, okay, no, it's cool. I can totally trust her. And then he gets suspicious again. And so he calls all the rental car places in the area and finds out that she actually did set an appointment at another one for an hour earlier and was gonna leave without him. And so then he's on a mission to go find her, and the cops are also pursuing her. And so then they all end up in the same parking garage, and he confronts her as she puts the luggage with all the money into the car, and he's like, you tricked me. Oh, or like, oh, it looks like you're not in pain today. And so you find out that she betrayed him. She had actually been pretending to be in pain so that he would just offer to rob a bank because he had been a previous bank robber. Like, this was a thing he had done before, and she thought that he would just, like, defer to it, and he did. And so then she was like, what did you expect? And then he is gonna go drive off with the car and the money, and she's like, hey, no, we need to do this together. And he's like, nah, bitch.
Bitch, what? Also, that was, like, a pretty big, like, leap of faith to take, I guess, that he was just gonna offer to rob a bank for her. Like, I know he had done it before, but he was supposedly rehabilitated. Like, that was, what if he had just been like, no, like, we can find another way, I don't want to go back to prison.
Yeah, and he had talked about not wanting to go to prison, and she told him not to. Like, he brought up robbing people and she said no. So, like, weird leap. I don't know. Huh. It worked, though, I guess. So, yeah, then he's going away with the money. The cops arrest her. She doesn't have the money. And then there's, like, weird moments where the lieutenant, the host, lieutenant, man, makes some, like, aggressive remarks about crime and how in other countries they'll, like, cut your face off for weed and stuff. And one of the other cops is like, you think that's a little bit extreme? And he's like, I don't know, check out their crime rates. And I was like, I don't think that I like that argument. Okay.
No.
That made me really uncomfortable. All right, fine, let's move on. And then, so the cops are in there. The two cops that aren't the lieutenant get separated. And then the lieutenant is, like, on the lower floors searching because they got in the place after the girl. And so they didn't see the interaction between the two. And they're just trying to, like, find her. And so they find her, see that she doesn't have it, try to find John. But the lieutenant busted into the You know how there's like a parking building like thing where like an attendant is and will like take your money for a mm-hmm. ticket to open the gate? He broke into that, knocked out the parking guard person. And John is like trying to exit and he's like knocking on the thing to try and get the guy's attention. And then the lieutenant pops out, points a gun at him. And then basically is just like, where's the money? And so then he takes most of the money, but gives John like a few stacks, which has to be like a few thousand dollars. And he's like, it was nice getting to know you. You're a fun time. And then John leaves. He's like, that should be enough to cross the border. And then John leaves. And then the lieutenant walks with the bag down the street. And then I presume John's in Mexico. And then the lieutenant's just back at work. And then one of his colleagues who had been on the case got a picture, a Polaroid picture of the host and John together on a couch in his house, because while John was drugged, the host took a picture of him and John and like two of his friends. Quote. And so then the picture gets mailed to one of the colleagues, and the colleague's like, you know, I have to investigate this. And so then they're having a conversation where he's like, you can't fake Polaroids. Also, your neighbor called and said that the lady that broke into her house, who is this guy, or like tried to break into her house, who is this guy, was the dude that woke up in front of your house the next day. And then the lieutenant's like, that's fucking crazy. You know, this woman's insane. And he's like, yeah, normally that would be true, but given that there's this picture and also this thing, you know, I have to investigate. Like, you know, that's only appropriate. And then, so they're having this whole conversation, and then the guy asks to get into his house to, like, check the place out. And the lieutenant's like, why don't you just come over for a dinner party? You can check the whole place out then. And then the guy's like, I was thinking something a little more formal than that. And then the guy's like, come on, we don't want to make this a big issue. And so then the guy agrees to go to his place for a dinner party. And then the end.
I'm so confused. Okay, wait. So the, like, whole him going after the girl and finding her and getting the money and all of that, that was after the dinner party?
Yes.
When he was, like, kidnapped? So, like, how did he just wake up and leave before the neighbor called the cops, or like before the cops got there? Like, how was he available to just go look for this girl?
Yeah. Yeah. He woke up before the cops got there and was like walking away. And that's how the neighbor woman saw his face too, to know that it was him. And then he was like peeling off all the stage makeup.
Yeah. Also, why the stage makeup? I don't understand why or how or what, like, what happened to all the other people? Did he actually slit their throats, or did he just weirdly put stage makeup on them to, like, pretend and then just leave them in his yard? Is that what he's going to do to, like, the other cop? Because that's pretty, like, damning evidence of guilt.
These are good questions. I know, I actually didn't. I feel like once the movie was over, I was just like, okay. So I didn't think about the whole, like, oh, yeah, if you don't actually murder this guy, it's probably not going to work. Also, yeah, he's a colleague of yours. So, like, you either have to kill him or convince him of your innocence. And if you kill him, I'm assuming he's told other people,
yeah,
where he went. If he thinks that you have something to do with this guy that is, like, known to be violent.
And, like, if you don't kill him and you just try and convince him of your innocence, how are you gonna, like, play off all of the people that you talk to that aren't there? I don't understand.
I don't know what his game plan was. I don't think he knows what his game plan was either. It has to be murder, right? He has to plan actual murder for this one. Except it doesn't seem like he's a murderer. It seems like he's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe he thinks if he does that, the guy won't do anything.
Maybe, but, like, he also had, like, a whole scrapbook full of pictures of other people that he did this to. Like, what happened to them? You could theoretically drug someone so much that they don't remember what happened, but, like, if you leave them in your yard, they're gonna have at least, like, a starting guess of who drugged them.
Yeah, especially if there's only one of you at the party.
I don't understand, man. That took many twists that I was not expecting, and none of them make sense.
Yeah, I feel like the thing with this movie is that, like, it had good potential. So my synopsis is just, like, there was too much going on. Like, they needed to just kill him and, like, completely ignore the, like, robbery plot line. They didn't need to do the cop thing. That was weird. Like, they needed to just focus on, like, this dude who happens to be a bad guy stumbles upon, like, the wrong house. And the end of it should have just been that he died or got away.
Like, you could even do the cop thing, like, and just have that ending be the same, but then, like, you know that the cop is probably going to die.
Yes. Yeah, like, John is dead, and you know that they're, like, investigating it, and then they get the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, no money exchange, obviously. And then the cop somehow gets suspicious, and, yeah. Like, he wouldn't get the Polaroid, obviously, but...
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, John gets away somehow. It isn't like he died. Like, he did just actually leave after the chess match.
Yeah.
Like, the stage makeup thing was just a weird way to not kill John, but also keep the other guy alive.
And it just kind of threw a wrench into their whole plot.
Yeah. And that robbery at the beginning was so unnecessary. Not, like, John robbing a place, but, like, that random one where he got mugged. You're like, why? Why did that happen?
I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, I did too, and then I reread, I was, like, reading some people's reviews on it, and I was just like, what? You have such a good idea! Like, he would have still had to go by foot, even if he had his wallet, I assume.
Like, you could have found some other way to get him to that dude's house.
Yeah. Maybe the car broke down. Maybe, I don't know. Also, because it's not like he was immediately on foot after he got mugged. He, like, got back in his car. He just didn't have a wallet.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. Yeah, so I feel like the ratings that were given to it were fair. It was fine. And there was definitely some imagery that was really interesting. Like, the scene where he was dancing on the table and, like, flashing between the two. Whew. Bananas.
It won awards.
It won awards. I mean, I think the three awards were probably, like, obscure.
Probably.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's like if you have nothing else to watch and you're kind of in the mood for, like, not a great thriller, worth it. It also kind of sucked because, like, the fucking trailer, if you watch it, because it's free on Prime... if you watch the trailer, it immediately gives away the whole, like, imaginary friends thing. Which is, like, the fun part of the movie. Like, everything else is just, like, the plot twists are bad. But that's, like, a good, like, you can tell that he's probably, like, he's gonna be crazy of some sort. And maybe he's gonna, like, bury the guy in his yard. But, like, you don't think that he's gonna just, like... not actually have people coming over.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. Also, like, from a mental health standpoint,
problematic. This movie is
not great.
Not great for mental health awareness. Yeah, I'd say that's true of a lot of thrillers. They really play on tropes that are just, like, not usually great.
That's true.
You have to go into it knowing that that's not representative of any actual people. It's just a trope.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any real recommendations, since this is probably not a one?
I recommend that Would You Rather movie. Actually, that one's fun. It was on Netflix at some point. I don't know if it is still, but basically it's about a girl who needs a lot of money for her brother's leukemia treatments, I think. She gets an invitation to come to this dinner party where they are playing, like, a game, and the winner gets a whole lot of money. I think it was, like, a whole lot of money or, like, anything, like, they could choose, like, the thing that they needed most. something like that.
I think it was, like, both. I think that it was just, like, basically anything you'd need.
Yeah. Yeah, and she shows up, and it seems very, like, fun for a second, and then it takes a very dark turn. And it is a horror movie, and it does have a bummer of an ending, so be forewarned. But overall, it's a fun watch.
Yeah. Be prepared for a real fucked up ending. It's a horror movie, so it feels authentic.
Yeah, it was appropriate for the genre.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would say if you need, like, a happy ending, it's not for you.
It's not
for you.
But if you
will, like an ending that you sit with and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, it makes an impact, for sure, because I still remember that movie.
Dude, same. Also, I forgot the ending until, because I was like, oh, yeah, I remember the premise, and you said the, like, just the words, the ending, and I was like, oh my god, yes, I remember that fucking ending. That was brave. That was a brave move.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're into, like, horror and dark movies, would recommend.
Yeah, for sure. Also love when it's free. On Netflix, you know how that works. Anyway, thanks for sticking it out. We hope it's been less horrifying for you than it was for us. Consider following us on Twitter at TroomlandPod and on Instagram at TroomlandPodcast.
We also love to get recommendations for other strange things you may want us to go over, so feel free to DM your recommendations or email us at shroomlandpodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. It helps other people who might be into this weird stuff find our podcast.
And remember, don't do drugs. Watch movies directed by people that were definitely on drugs.
Or for your own sanity, maybe not.
Da 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 da. Shroomland!